tornadoes, hurricanes, blizzards. Yeah, we cover it all on Twister Talk.
Welcome to Twister Talk. I'm Gary. Thanks for joining us. We'll continue our interview with Nate McGinnis from the National Weather Service office in Wilmington. And Sue and Brandon will be joining me on that. So without further ado, let's jump right back into the interview. People forget, I guess, sometimes, Nate, there's a massive weather system and a micro weather system. And like, why does, you know, this area here may have more severe weather than another area? But you can't always see those things in your readings or even in the radar. From what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong on that. They're just sometimes,
no, I mean,
it's hard to see everything. You just can't.
I don't know. Well, and that's the thing where I say one of the things that we've tried to do as a local office over the last few years is dedicate someone to what we call mesoanalyst, you know, as a mesoanalyst. So basically, this person is in charge of keeping track of those areas that you're talking about. Okay. The entire Wilmington forecast area is in an enhanced risk. But is it actually all just the same risk? Or can we dig into the atmosphere, dig into the features? Where is the warm front? Where is the cloud cover maybe breaking? As you guys know, cloud cover in Ohio is one of the biggest issues when it comes to severe weather predictability. Is 2 days out, 4 days out, 6 days out, this is going to be an outbreak, this is going to be crazy. And then the night before, the thunderstorms that occurred in Indiana, Illinois, have brought all this like scattered thunderstorms and rain, a bunch of clouds, and our severe weather event is hosed. Obviously a good thing, but man, when you've got an enhanced risk 3 days out and it turns to nothing, you've got some explaining to do. So we actually are trying to dedicate a mesoanalyst, this person that is dedicated to our forecast area, and they're looking for the differences, and we are communicating, hey, down in Southern Ohio, down in the tri-state, Southwest Ohio, your threat is increasing. Yes, Columbus, you are still in an enhanced risk, but we are seeing an enhanced threat. I shouldn't say enhanced twice. You're seeing the issue with some of our terminology sometimes. We're seeing a better potential now in the tri-state for better warming, and we can look at the satellite and say, yep, here come the thunderstorms. Columbus, sorry, you're still in the clouds. We still are going to hold on to your tornado watch or whatever, and we'll continue to update. Yeah, so yeah, we're trying our best to actually even try harder to break apart the larger features and look more localized.
No matter how well prepared you are, sometimes you still get caught off guard. And it just sneaks up on you, and there it is. So the fact that, you know, and you talk about the cloud cover, all I remember is on May 3rd of 1999, a small hole in the cirrus canopy opened over southwest of Oklahoma City, and it was on. I mean, and you think about it, just one event, one little tiny thing changes, and it's Katie bar the door. It's unbelievable.
The Memorial Day outbreak was that those storms were supposed to congeal. They were supposed to do what we call upscale, right? They form, they produce some tornadoes, maybe in Indiana, but eventually the storms come together, a cool pool becomes established, and that cool pool races across Ohio into the evening, and we lose a lot of our surface heating, so the storms fall apart and the event's over. But instead, the storms remain discrete. They did not upscale. They remain localized. And and I'm going to open up a huge can of worms here, but the same tornado that caused the EF4 in Trotwood and in Dayton actually was the same tornado, the same storm that formed a tornado in Pickaway County that ended up hitting my parents' house while I was down in Jacksonville. So that storm remained discrete for literally hours, never merged with anything else. It stayed discrete for hours. It wasn't always producing a tornado, but it produced, I think, like four or five tornadoes throughout its life cycle, which is just mind-boggling to me in Ohio.
Yeah, for in Ohio, that's not... Yeah. That almost takes you back to the super outbreak when the same storm that produced the Xenia tornado almost produced a tornado over Columbus and then did produce one just east of Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those long track violent storms. Fortunately, we don't get as many of those here as they get in other parts of the country. But yeah, we've also talked about, Nate, regarding severe weather, and we'll work in some other subjects here in a second. But, you know, we always, the stuff we talk about among ourselves is like, we keep thinking we're overdue for a major outbreak in this part of the country. And you can't predict those things, but sometimes people say, well, at the end of, reading over the years, like at the end of a La Nina, that's when the super outbreak occurred. It was also, I remember reading at the end of a La Nina year, we had that Dixie outbreak in 2011 that was so destructive. When you look at worldwide weather patterns, and obviously you can't, you know, go out weeks and months, but can you see, well, if this holds together, we could see the same pattern that we had 10 years ago or 5 years ago, maybe inside of April or May, you know, begin to affect us with the jet stream or anything. Do you look for, do you guys go that far forward in looking at patterns over the years and saying, could this happen again today?
Yeah, I think, Gary, it's a great question. I would say that I'm not a complete expert when it comes to transitioning out of an El Nino into a La Nina and the specific outbreaks that have occurred. But the answer to your question is yes. We do look at, you know, look at this El Nino, for example. We just had three straight La Ninas, and every single one of those La Ninas provided a different flavor for the winter. You know, we typically advertise, oh, yeah, you know, moderate to strong El Nino, La Nina, it's almost always higher than average snowfall for the Ohio Valley. Mm-hmm. But there is something with global patterns that is still fascinating, and I know the advancements of AI is learning those patterns, right? That is the definition of what AI is, right? It takes what has happened before, it learns the behavior, and it tries to duplicate that based on present day situations and looking into the future. So I know that we try to do that as humans. I'm not entirely confident in the predictability of them, because I think even if you're doing a El Nino to La Nina switch, El Nino to La Nina switch. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at the Atlantic waters. You know, the Atlantic waters are the warmest at this time of year than they've ever been since they've been keeping track over the certain parts of the Atlantic Ocean. And so when you're talking global patterns, that thermal displacement from the equator up to the poles, that's going to change your jet stream, right? That's going to change how your jet stream is aligned. It's going to change the blocking. It's going to change your ridging and your troughing in the Pacific and in the Atlantic. So it's just one of those things where I love that scientists continue to dig into the global patterns, the Arctic Oscillation, the North Atlantic Oscillation, all these features that interact with each other, but they're also at the mercy of the base state of the Earth with regards to where do our temperatures currently stand. So I wish I could know certain, you know, how confident we could be, but we're trying. That's the thing. That's kind of the end of the answer, is that we're not going to stop trying to figure out how far can we push the limit. So thanks for that question, but it's it remains a huge challenge in the weather enterprise.
Well, I can imagine it would be. You know, you talk about California has been lashed the last couple of months with just incredible rains and storms, and even a couple small tornadoes touching down in places you don't really think they don't touch down in. So that was, we even talked about that a few weeks ago in one of our shows here about the torrential rains in that part of the country. The atmospheric rivers, just dropping water everywhere. Also, for people who may be interested, the National Weather Service does offer spotter training, and maybe you could talk a little bit about spotter training, what that is, and see if and put it out there for the audience, and because I know not only in Ohio but all states do some kind of spotter training. So you can talk about what Wilmington does. That'd be great.
Yeah, Gary, we've got a full slate this year, basically stretching from the end of February into the end of April, and including a virtual one that we're doing in the mid-May. So this is really spotter training season. It's just getting ready to ramp up. We offer in-person and virtual spotter training, which is basically a 1.5 to 2 hour class where we talk about, you know, from the very meteorology 101 of why thunderstorms form to the actual, you know, I would say spotting information, which is like understanding cloud formations. In Ohio, we get calls about funnels and wall clouds all the time. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, everyone seems to know the term wall cloud, but they don't actually know what they're saying when they say wall cloud, because wall clouds are actually pretty rare, especially in Ohio, because you kind of need a supercell type structure in order to get that. Most of the time, what are people actually saying? They're seeing shelf clouds.
Right.
They see shelf cloud. They say wall cloud. Those two features are enormously far apart.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And what the storm is actually doing, because shelf clouds, I don't have any numbers on this, but I would say I would probably say it's 9 to 1 for every nine shelf clouds that we get, maybe there's a storm that's producing a wall cloud. So it's incredibly important for people that, if they want to know more about spotting, not chasing, spotting weather as it's coming to your local neighborhood, to your backyard, that's what we advertise here. This is to give you the expertise, refresh the knowledge. We have people that come back every 2 or 3 years and they sit on one of these again. And it's always important for people to understand what they're looking at when they look out their back porch window, or they look out, they look out their garage, or Susie sends them a picture from their neighborhood and says it's a tornado. And it's just something that it's why we continue to invest a ton of time going to these in person.
Go into something here for just a second, because we've talked about spotter training, and Nate, you've brought up the importance of communication and outreach here a few times. And this ties into something I wanted to ask you about. Speaking of things like COVID, a couple of years ago here when we were all kind of stuck inside, I decided to pursue the goal of acquiring my ham radio license. Successfully completed that. And we actually did an episode of the show here where we discussed the significance and the importance of ham radio, both in weather forecasting and weather communication. And I was wondering if maybe you could walk us through that a little bit, if you are aware of or could describe a situation or scenario recently where ham radio played an important role in forecasting and spotting. And would you encourage anyone who's looking maybe at getting their spotter training to also consider getting their ham radio license?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brandon. I definitely, in my 7 years, have seen my fair share of why the ham program is such a close partnership with the National Weather Service. It's so close that out of all of our volunteers that we have, they're the only ones that we actually bring into the office that we have a space for, because we kind of understand that if things go down, despite how old and archaic the technology is, it will be there as the backup. Yeah. You know, it takes a lot to knock that out. And it's something that it's always that kind of reassurance that, you know, to see the volunteers continue to come in and be involved with the event. And, you know, a lot of times it's, you know, we have a system where they come in during a watch or, whenever the situation warrants. And sometimes it can feel a bit of a pain in the rear end to say, hey, I know it's a Saturday evening, but we've got a tornado watch that just went out. Can anyone come in? And lo and behold, they are incredibly loyal people. So yeah, I would tell anyone that if you're interested in this, if you're wanting to be a part of a community — I'm not a part of the community, but I've interacted with them, and from my perspective, it seems like a very loyal and dependable group of individuals that enjoy what they do, but what they seem to have is this very selfless nature to support and to be there as a resource. And I've always enjoyed it. Even if they don't bring in that report that's like, oh, we didn't hear about that from anywhere else, this is so perfect. It's the dependability, right? It's the fact that they're there. we have this automated texting thing that we send out to our Skywarn groups, and they'll text us back almost immediately and say, all right, we've got someone coming, or, you know, give us a minute to figure something out. But they're incredibly dependable, and we obviously advertise ham radio during our spotter training. We always bring it up, and we try to continue to be almost like a little mini outreach for them, because we get their we see their impact on us and in the office every single time they come in. So, and that's where I'll stop with that.
That's a great answer. Great answer.
That's a very good answer. And I think there's some room in there for volunteer opportunities too, like maybe putting together a local group of spotters that would liaise with the local emergency management.
Right.
Just to get more on the ground truth of storms that might be affecting a small area.
It's a good thing to remember. It's a good, you know, and I can understand people will call in on anything.
Oh yeah.
But also at the same time, if you're calling saying I'm seeing a funnel throw trucks into the air, you need to call them and let them know. They'd like to have that information.
That's a little more serious.
Mainly see the trucks coming their way.
We'll see the video on social. My favorite is people will call us and say, "Hey, did you see my video?" And we're like, what? They're like, yeah, I took the time to take a video, send you the video on social media, and then I called you to let you know that there was a tornado on the ground.
You might have wanted to call first and then take the video.
Yeah, that's a wonderful 2-mile-wide F5 there. Appreciate you sharing that. It's like after the point, but I guess we're good. So, social media is such a great creature and strange animal at times.
It's very weird.
It's really
very
weird. It's very strange. Well, first of all, you can go to weather.gov/ILN, and that's the Wilmington Weather Office, and check their spotter training schedule if you're interested in that. They've got things going on right into May, and you can sign up. They'll have a breakdown of different areas, different parts of the counties across the state where they'll be doing in-person training, and also they'll be doing a training in May for online. So if you want more information on that, by all means, check in with them, because being a spotter, or like Nate said, emergency management, they're always looking for people to help out. And you know what? That'd be if you want to give something back to the community, that'd be a good way to go.
Absolutely.
It'd be a good way to go. Nate, any last thoughts about any great wisdom you want to leave us with before we wrap it up here?
I mean, I think that was a fairly good conclusion. I will always ask that people remember to have multiple ways of receiving warnings. Mm-hmm. I know you may have your favorite social media app. You may have your favorite broadcast meteorologist. In today's day and age, there is so much information that you're being thrown. When you see a Facebook post of you know, someone saying severe weather in 5 days, dig into it a little bit more. Don't just take that data and run away with it. Constantly remain updated. Keep in mind other resources. I'm not going to say only trust the National Weather Service, because that's simply not the right answer in today's day and age. Information is everywhere. Mm-hmm. I just ask people to verify information, check with other resources, other sources that you may trust, that you may have, and I will always push for that when severe weather strikes.
That's great. I mean, that's a good way of wrapping it up.
Absolutely.
So, Nate McGinnis, the National Weather Service office in Wilmington and Ohio. Nate, thank you for your time. I really appreciate that a lot.
Absolutely.
And giving us all the good information as we try to, you know, keep Twister Talk twisting away here.
So, twisting in the wind sometimes.
Again, Nate, thanks so much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you
being
all.
Part of it. And for Twister Talk, I'm Gary.
I'm Sue.
And I'm Brandon.
All right. Keep the sunshine out and look for the clouds. Talk to you next time.